Welcome, listeners, to time for an awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is History and Current Events program. From a cultural perspective, we find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom, and with all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com. That's timeforawakening.com, which is the home page, and listen to the live stream there. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening, and listen to the live stream from that location. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. You can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices, and then in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon where you can listen to the program. Stream it live. You can even stream it into your car. So again, it's Time for Awakening with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. That's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And before you leave that page, do me a favor and hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook and Time for Awakening Media, which is home base, has been launched. Put that in your address bar. That should be one of your favorites. That's timeforawakening.com. Timeforawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. There you'll see more interesting content, podcasts, different programs that you can download, listen at later times, or even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites and put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, it's a Friday evening in the city of Philadelphia, and wherever you are, it's Friday. The time is a little different here on the Eastern Seaboard. It's 8:07, and we're in open form this evening, kind of freestyle Friday, so to speak. Anything that's on your mind, give us a call. We'll talk about it. Just dial that number, 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. A lot of things going on in the news. We can discuss any of the topics that's on your mind. Me and Richard will probably throw out a couple just for the sake of conversation, and we'll go from there. And you can join in this conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. You can also join us on the chat line on with Time for Awakening. Just go to www.uberconference.com/Time for Awakening. Again, that's www.uberconference.com/Time for an Awakening. And to the right side of your page on your device, you'll see a column. And then the third icon down is the chat button, and you can make comments or ask a question or just chat back and forth. That's a chat feature that's added on the Time for Awakening telecast. A broadcast that you can utilize. So again, that's www.uberconference.com/timeforanawakening. We'll be right back to get things started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at Time for an Awakening @gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And again, as I stated, we're in open forum this evening. This Friday evening here in Philadelphia, you can give us a call, 215-490-9832, and throw out a topic for discussion. That's 215-490-9832. But before we do that, I'd like to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Allen.
How are you, sir?
I'm good. Looking to deal with this heat wave they calling it. Elliot,
I know you love it.
The heat. I hear people complain it all. And I keep asking, how can melanated people, see, that means that we didn't got so used to these air conditioners. I shouldn't say that, right? How can melanated people who are children of the sun, you know, went through tropical areas and deserts, be complaining about the heat? I don't know. You know, I must got that little code in the genes, but I got it.
Yeah, well, it's been 90 plus for the past, 5 days, and I think it's supposed to go a couple days more. So, yeah, it's been hot out there. That's an understatement.
And it seems that in the news, the heat must be having some effect on what the current events and and at least what's coming across our consciousness, because people are saying some interesting things as they deal with the, I guess it may be because of the era of Trump, you know, I don't know. It just seems like everybody's doing a real little reassessing and people going someplace on the other side. It's just some strange things going on here.
Well, I mean, it's open forum, so, and the callers can get involved, but some things in the news you want to throw out, go ahead. The floor is yours, Brother Richard.
I didn't want to do this, Elliot, but when I seen this article about the, now it seemed to have been a Republican convention in Cleveland.
Okay.
And there was some, and that the NRA, or they were expecting, you know, I don't know if I got it right, Ellie, but they were expecting white gun demonstrators to be there. And I would assume because it's the Republican convention, they were going to be white gun demonstrators in support of the, you know, that bill that they always push. And Cleveland is the, how you say that? A right to carry?
Yeah, open carry.
Open carry.
Ohio. Mm-hmm.
Ohio, right. So it seems that a group of African-American men came to the convention with their guns in this open carry state. And the union commissioner just could not take that. The police union commissioner, Stephen Lomas, president of Cleveland Police Patrol Association, he immediately sent a letter to Governor Kinesh saying that they got to change, he has to change the law.
Ain't
that kind of strange?
Listen, I don't think he has the power to change that because it's in the so-called in the Constitution. Now, I guess he can ask him to suspend the privileges temporarily. I guess he can ask them to do that. I don't know how they would go about doing it, but I did read that article.
And he said, I don't care what they got to do, just got to do something. And as you said, the governor told him, like, we just can't change it. But it, Elliot, we talk all the time about, you know, what is happening in, to us by police with guns, and just the proliferation of guns in our community, especially and how much we need to be able to learn how to carry, not only carry, but utilize guns and be in clubs that actually teach and organize around carrying guns as it relates to African-American community, just because of what we perceive the tension is right now. Right? Mm-hmm. But you see just us carrying guns. I mean, the brother that got killed in the car, was that a few weeks ago, who had the right to carry.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a, would you say, an open, also a open state for carrying.
And yeah, so Minnesota. Mm-hmm.
We carrying guns produce some kind of fear. You know, we even enunciating in a legal manner. Now, they get everybody psyched up, you know, saying that we got to turn our guns in and, you know, they have big campaigns. We'll give you $1, $5, some bread and some water if you bring your guns. And these are the politicians, right? Particularly the black politicians, I assume, or at least in Philadelphia. You know, you bring your guns and you drop them off, and you know, that's going to make it safe in your neighborhood. But I have to say, it just struck me with bold laughter. To see this sheriff, he must have been frightened, right? He must have been frightened. I mean, that he was saying, I don't care what the governor has to do, suspend it, whatever. But you don't let me get into my colloquialism. You see these Negroes coming up here assembling with guns and they got the right to carry them? No, we got to stop this. Well, so that struck me.
Well, you know, historically, that always did fear white men and women, is the thought of black people carrying guns. And I'm talking about since we've been here.
Yeah.
is and that was the whole debate around them being in any of the wars that this country had fought in, whether it's the war against the British, whether it was the Civil War, that it was a debate on whether to put a gun in the hand of a black man.
First World War, Second World War.
Yeah, exactly. It was always that debate and fear that you turn the gun, just turn it and point it at them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that has to be the underlying fear.
And you know, like you said, Virginia was a cold Virginia. South Carolina was definitely, especially after Nat Turner revolt, they were strictly against Africans having any close proximity to a gun or even looking like they're going to get a gun. I don't know which was the greater fear, Elliot, the gun, having black men with a gun or having black men looking at white women, which was all in their mind. Because I really believe, you know, that the history, when we really start to write it, it'll be told that a lot of that black men looking at white women is really white women looking at black men. You know what I mean? White women having the power over black men and utilizing as white men utilize the power over black women. But we don't really talk about that in a historical context of how white women had lusted, and before they lusted to the point, and we go, oh, okay, let's calm it down a little bit. We ain't gonna call it lust, right, Ellie? We'll just say they found black men appealing to the point they had to put laws in place from the 1700s to prevent them from marrying. It wasn't preventing. They were saying, we got to stop these white women who want to marry black men. Now, what happens when you got a whole field full of, I shouldn't even go there, Ellie, but the history is there. And we need
most definitely. Yeah, most definitely the history is there.
Yeah. And you know, because we propagate this story like it was only these here white men were looking at black women. But some of them, we seen some documentation about how some of them babies that came out, you know, that white slave master or that white abolitionist thought was going to be his child came out a little bit too chocolate, a little bit too chocolate. And in some places, they got rid of both of them quickly,
mm-hmm.
you know, because of that. So, I just bring that up, Elliot, because I think it's important for us to, you know, look at history from all our vantage points so that we can be able to, because there is a writing, a continuous writing of even how slavery was. And in a lot of cases, we're not in the institutions that are doing those writings. And the gun and the fear of white men, of black men having guns, and as you said, that debate and the fear of them supposedly being afraid of black men with their Miss Anne. I shouldn't say that. They put a lot of laws in place and had a lot of deliberation about that. So that's why that article tickled me, because here in 2017, you have a police sheriff with all this shooting going on. You don't hear no sheriff being upset or nothing, you know, telling them to change the laws, change, you know, talking about changing the blue code. You don't hear none of that. But the blue code of silence, that is. But when it gets down to, you know, black men assembling.
We know our customers have busy lives. That's why we're working hard to improve our customer service.
That's me, Richard. Go ahead.
That means 2-hour appointment windows, including nights and weekends. And if we're ever late, we'll give you an automatic $20 credit.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was just bringing that point up. As far as that, how that article got.
Yeah, I was just trying to queue up this video after you got done. I want to share this story with the listening audience about in St. Petersburg. Now, you know, it's some candidates running down there under the Black is Back Uhuru Party.
Okay.
Running right. for mayor. I think the one sister was at the Universal African People's Party forum, political right. forum in St. Louis not too long ago when Zaki Baruti was on. And right. Donnie Bradford from the 1 Million Conscious Black Voters and Contributors had shared that she was there. It's another candidate also running in St. Petersburg. And I don't know whether you saw the news story. A little debate erupted at one of these candidates' forums. Did you see that story, Richard?
No, I didn't.
Well, I'm going to share with you. It's a video that goes with it, but I'm going to share with you the AP story of what went on July 20th. It was posted July 20th. A candidate for mayor in St. Petersburg erupted. A candidate for mayor for St. Petersburg, Florida, erupted at a black reparations activist, telling them to go back to Africa during the mayoral debate. Paul Kanjemi, who was running as an independent, directed his rant towards Jesse Neville, a mayoral candidate who is chairman of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement and a group of white allies of the African People's Socialist Party that organizes a segment of the white community for reparations to the black community. Mr. Neville, you and your people, you talk about reparations. The reparations you talk about, Mr. Neville, your people already got your reparations, Kajemi said. Your reparations came in the form of a man called Barack Obama. Despite angry shouts from the many Neville supporters in the crowd, Kanjemi continued, my advice to you and to your supporters, if you don't like it here in America, get a plane. Planes leave every hour from Tampa Airport. Go back to Africa. Go ahead back. Kanjemi, age 60, later elaborated on his comments in an email to the Tampa Bay Times. The reporter said, you did tell those people to go back to Africa. Kanjemi said, my remarks was meant for the group Mr. Neville represents, not all African Americans, just those that Neville represents. On his candidate's Facebook page, Neville 27 said Kanjemi's remarks was representative of a larger problem surrounding the struggle for justice for the black community in this country, which he said was defining question in which all candidates must respond to. I entered this race nearly 4 months ago on a platform of unity through reparations, and we have to build a powerful, broad-based movement in St. Petersburg that represents thousands of people who want to unify our racial divide in our city, and who understand that unity without justice is impossible, and that justice begins with reparations to the black community. Both Kanjemi and Neville are running against the Republican and Democratic candidates in the St. Petersburg mayoral race. And although Kanjemi's comments were against the very platform that Neville and the Uhuru movement represents, Neville said that he's running against the Democratic candidate incumbent Rob Kaiserman, who also said attacked the Uhuru movement. Kanjemi's comments came on the heels of a slander campaign by operatives of the Democratic Party and St. Petersburg Police Union, who both endorsed members incumbent mayoral candidate Rick Kaiserman, who has labeled my supporters and the Uhuru movement as domestic terrorists. An example, said Neville, of Kanjemi's comments overshadows a more substantial discussion in the mayoral debate, including a question over whether St. Petersburg should continue to have police officers patrol public schools. In Petersburg, there has been many publicized acts of horrible police violence against black children and public education systems. All of the other candidates, including Kaiserman, Baker, and Kanjemi, responded by saying, yes, they should continue policing of black children in St. Pete schools? I respond, hell no. Both Keiserman and the Republican candidate Rick Baker condemn Kangemi's comments. Kangemi is running for mayor for the third time, having run in 2009 and 2013. Let me see if I can get the audio of the guy's remarks here to, if I could find this.
We're here when you need us, so you can...
No, I don't think I can pull that up, Richard. But it's interesting because one of the candidates, this guy Neville, is a white guy.
Right.
That's running and representing the Uhuru movement and running on the basis of reparations for blacks in St. Petersburg in regards to city contracts and fairness in regards to blacks in the city. He mentioned about police patrolling black neighborhoods and patrolling the schools. This other candidate made remarks about blacks going back to Africa. That shouldn't surprise any of our listening audience.
Right, right,
but
right.
The thing is, what I'm looking at is this the guy Neville. Because,
right.
You know, when Brother Yeshiteli was on, I pulled up some information on him. So I've been seeing him for a while. And what he's the position that he's taking. Now, that's the right position to take. I don't want to give him credit because he's white. Some of our people, they fall over. They're so gushing for joy when they hear white folks say something about fairness and reparations towards blacks. I mean, I don't give them any extra credit for that. That's only the right thing to do. You know, and it kind of harkens back to that when Roland Martin had Umar Johnson on his show.
Mm-hmm.
The black woman that was there had so much joy talking about, what's his name, Tim Wise. I mean, who cares? Listen, if those people come out and say that blacks deserve reparations, they don't get no extra points for that. That's only the right thing. They should be saying that. So if the fella comes out, this fella Neville, that's running in solidarity with the Uhuru movement and standing on their principles that blacks deserve reparations, then he's saying the right thing. No extra points. He's doing the right thing. But
and it stays in the context of the historical white abolitionists who were doing the right thing.
Yeah, but I mean, you don't deserve any extra credit. No, we'll put you on a pedestal. No. If you want to do the right thing, you're going to have to stand up against your own people because it's clear that your people have been standing on white supremacy and racism since they've been here. So if you want to stand on the right thing and stand on the side of people that have been oppressed, have at it. I mean, you're only doing the right thing. You don't deserve any extra credit, no brownie points, or nothing else. Just like if a black person stands up, he's doing the right thing. He's doing what he should be doing.
Yeah, it's you know, the Uhuru movement has had a long history of having that clarity of having white supporters, and from what I understand, the organizational structure is that they can't participate. They can't organize the black community. They're there to organize the white community, which harkens back to, I believe it was Malcolm who, you know, at one point was saying, especially I believe he was in Cambridge when he gave the was speaking to those students and said the best thing that white liberals could do. It was to go into the black, to go into the white community and organize the white community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which, you know, it's been a part of the African American political philosophy that we can collaborate together, but we shouldn't have need you to actually organize us. We can come together, meet. And support each other on our own terms, which men, women, people of power, that's how they're supposed to come to the table their own terms.
And it's kind of ironic that what you just stated, because this is what the guy says, Neville, that's running in solidarity with the Uhuru movement. He said Neville, along with a group of white allies from the African People's Socialist Party that organizes in the white community for reparations to the black community. So, here and again, okay, he's doing the right thing. No special brownie points. That's the right thing to do.
And you won't hear too much of that other than coalitions like that in from the white community making any overtures towards even considering it. You know, they're whether they're liberal, conservative, or moderate. They're when we say reparations is due, it seems that there's either silence or this pushback. Well, you already got your reparations, or how you expect to get paid, and then it goes on to the other side.
And you know, once you start talking about this subject, some of these white folks come off so stupid when you're dealing with reparations, like this guy. He's a mayoral candidate. He's talking about black people got their reparations. It's called Barack Obama. Are you kidding? I mean, what kind of sense? That's so stupid, it don't even deserve a response.
And that's what they believe, too.
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. That he was some type of reparations for black people.
Mm-hmm. So
because you don't hear some of the people that you're supposed to hear screaming about reparations, because according to the Bible, that a lot of these ministers seem to stomp and scream about every Sunday, it talks about if a man is damaged, he's supposed to be repaired. That's the right thing to do. I ain't talking about no Christian thing to do. That's the right thing to do according to what it says in the text in several different areas. But you don't hear a black man, I ain't even talking about white ministers, you don't hear black ministers screaming about reparations. And it's kind of ironic. And it's not ironic because they know which side their bread is buttered on. I see that Sharpton is organizing this minister's march. He's organizing all these faith-based, it's supposed to be across racial lines, all these ministers to join in and march down in Washington. Now it's kind of clear to me, and maybe it'll come out later, that if you remember Bush, the second Bush, the son.
Right.
Now, his father probably had something going, and I know that the Clintons had it going. But I don't know the name of the program. It always changes. But I do remember when Bush Jr. had that faith-based initiative money, that black ministers was lining up trying to get some of it and finding ways where they could get some, even if they wasn't Republican.
Right.
Obama changed the name. It wasn't called faith-based initiative money under Obama. It was called something else. And Sharpton had tied into it the whole period that Obama was in. Anything that happened, Sharpton was called. He in the Democratic Party, so it was still the same faith-based initiative money, but under Obama administration, the name had changed. If you don't remember, Richard, maybe some of our callers will remember what the name of that program was changed to.
And I hope they do, because the other one that I think Trump just brought in was that it wouldn't matter about them having the 501c status for them to be able to be engaged. I believe it's so that they can be engaged in the politics and be able to receive federal money.
Yeah, well, it must be something going on where Trump or his administration is planning to cut. Is that must be you? Okay.
That
Trump and his administration must be planning to cut that money for a lot of these, especially these black ministers getting it. So all of a sudden you're going to hear Sharpton, I think Jesse is involved, and several of them with this minister's march, because they don't want that money stream cut. They've been making a lot of money over these past years. They've become millionaires. So they're going to do all they can to keep their to keep that money stream flowing somehow.
You know, Ellie, at the same time, I'm wondering also, because I'm looking at this another article where the AME bishops tells the NAAC that they are basically told them that they're irrelevant for now. Now, where have you heard that come from, you know, before? the bishops, I mean, of a Christian. Now, I recognize and I give all props to Reverend Richard Allen for creating a totally independent Christian organization, institution in America. But here now, in 2017, they said that the NAACP, you know, it says the NAACP boasts that it's the oldest civil rights organization in the country. While this is true and ought to make us proud, longevity alone is not proof of relevance. Now, does that mean that the church and the civil rights community are recognized, or one is telling the other it's time for them to reassess? And it says that, as the bishops point out, one of the first areas that the NAACP should change is the structure of the national board. The national board has 64 board members. And they went on to say that they recognize that it's all about getting money.
Oh, but that's what I was going to say. Go ahead. Because I hadn't even read it, but that's what I was going to say. But go ahead, Richard. Go ahead, Freddie.
That's what they, you know, and they said, well, the NAACP has to be about the advancement of people of color, and people of color are not being able to advance without a good education, with the consequences of not being able to get or create good jobs, decent housing, health care, and creating good communities, the council bishops wrote. And they sent in a letter to you know, and for my mind, Elliot, you know, and hopefully the callers have a different perspective, especially from the different areas in the country in relationship to, as you said, because people like Sharpton and Jesse, they are almost out. They're gone. I mean, whatever money they done got, you know, like whatever people they done got around them, the younger people ain't listening to them. I mean, their memberships are not swelling, as we seen with the discussion with Umar. You know, and it's more once again in this generation, it's more younger people that are identifying with, on one hand, Bernie Sanders, or at least that independent wing coming outside of the Democratic and the Republic, coming outside of the Democratic Party, and on the other hand, a Pan-African, African nationalist perspective, what they call unconscious, right? A conscious perspective. So these older guys are in a disarray, and Black Lives Matter is the ones that is galvanizing them. So here the AME, one of the oldest institutions Black institutions in the country, is now telling its other civil institution, y'all ain't, you know, one, you're taking too much of that money, and two, you're taking too much of that money and you ain't doing nothing. And these are the things we need to be hearing you be doing something about, because how can we continue to support you when the young people, because, you know, young people ain't going to church like as before, right? I don't know if you see that, Elliot.
Mm-hmm. Oh, certainly.
You know, so they had to get these young people back in the church. Because they need to get that tie.
They need to reassess what they're doing, because if you remember, they called during the campaign, when Clinton was running against Trump, she came here and went down to Richard Allen's church, and all of those ministers ought to have been ashamed of themselves. They all came in under the AME and others. I think the AME was spearheading.
They laid hands
on Hillary Clinton, mm-hmm. and asked God to put her in office. You remember that?
So evidently they had their convention here.
So evidently God wasn't listening, because he didn't put Hillary Clinton in office. He put Donald Trump. So maybe God didn't hear their prayer, these AME ministers. Maybe they need maybe they need to reassess what they're doing. They're talking about that's the pot calling the kettle black, talking about some reassess the NAACP. Both of them is worthless. If they want to do something, get out of that damn pulpit and go do something like Reverend Pinckney and them is doing. Get out here with some social justice and real social justice. I ain't talking about no window dressing. Oh, black people need more jobs. Come on here. Tell us something we don't know. They are a joke. Let's go to the end of this open phones. So callers can get involved at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Let's go to 646. 646, join the conversation, brother.
Yes, my good brothers. How are y'all today? I see y'all didn't bring up one of the finest thick rolls we have ever produced. We'll be walking back into the bosom of the Neanderthal white woman within the next 2 months. All OJ. All white women are so happy they got that Negro coming to spend a little time with them, spend a little money with them, do all of those things. And OJ is just as happy, obligated, and grateful to be able to fulfill his services as the shuffling, jiving coon that he is over the next couple of years, hopefully, if he lived that long and he doesn't wind up back in the daddy's house.
He might might surprise you, Jay.
Listen. That Negro there could pass up a white woman if you paid him to. Ain't no way God has it, OJ will ever in his life pass up a white woman. Come on, brother. You know better than that. You know what I mean? He's been so upset and depressed and lonely because he ain't had the bosom of the white woman in his soul and in his heart and him. He don't even know what to do, please. You know that and I know that. That man is fiending for a white woman like a drug addict fiends for his drug. You know? Come on. But
yeah, well, if he had any sense, because all of this trouble that he's gotten into has basically centered around his pursuit of white women. If he had any sense, he'd kind of reassess his position and leave them people alone and just live his life.
Yeah, but you know, truthfully, I don't think that he killed that woman. Honestly, straight up, I don't think he killed that woman. It just to me wasn't physically possible to do it, and there was a whole bunch of other things in play with some of the dirty, dastardly things that she was into and what she was doing. I agree with you, Jay.
I never believed that he did it because they never accounted for all the blood. I mean, the way those people was stabbed and throat slashed and heads almost decapitated, it was too much blood for him to run to a Bronco, get in, and all they find is a drop of blood on the armrest and a drop in the driveway. Yeah. Come on. It was too much blood. He took a bath before he went home?
A super Negro, you know, a superhero. You know what I mean? They just tried to use him, and they got him, though, because OJ, in all honesty and truthfulness, is basically stupid anyway. So he didn't know that. You know, he got off and he was supposed to just go somewhere and sit his behind down and stay away from white women and just live life on a level that, you know, just enjoying it, man. But he couldn't. He needed the spotlight. He needed to do whatever he had to do to appease that beast.
And if you remember, Jay and Richard, that after he was exonerated from that murder, and I mean, white folks openly shunned him.
Yeah.
And the black community reached out to him. And then he was going around to different black churches. You've seen him in kente cloth. And I mean, he was, I guess people thought that, he would really change his image. But like you said, yeah. that draw of white women to him, it was too much. He went back to doing what he was doing.
He couldn't get that kryptonite up. You know what I mean? But you know, also,
I guess to him it's kryptonite.
I had to laugh when y'all was talking about that Neanderthal down in Florida and what he said. You know, I don't understand honestly why black folks get so bent out of shape when the Neanderthal talked to them in that fashion. Because, you know, that's how most of them feel about it.
Exactly. You should expect comments like that.
Yeah, you know, that's like common practice. And it seems like we get so discombobulated and so bent out of shape because some white man is honest enough to tell us what he really feels and what we really should do, that we just start bugging out. I mean, it just makes me want to laugh, to be honest with you, because you and I both know he give less than a damn of what you think. But the sad thing is, y'all ain't going to do nothing about it. You know what I mean? Y'all going to be up in the huff in the puff for a few minutes because he spoke to you in such a foul fashion. But what honestly are you really going to do? Punish him for, you know, him speaking in that manner towards our people. You know what I mean? I mean, I don't even think, from what I gathered, he's electable anyway. Right. But it just goes to show the blatant disrespect that he has with you and that he knows that there ain't really nothing that you could do about it. You know what I mean? Other than him and her. You know, it's not like you're going to be able to stop him from getting campaign money. You're not gonna be able to stop him from going out there and speaking in that fashion. You know what I mean? It's not like there ain't a whole bunch of white people out there who agree with what he's saying. You know, it's just like they can't blatantly just come out and say it. You know what I mean? That's the thing that always get me is we get so bent out of shape and upset when people talk and reveal their true feelings about how they feel about us, and we don't want to just accept the fact that, you know, white people don't like us. They really don't have no use for us. They really don't want to do anything to solve our problem in this country and to make things better in the so-called BS racial harmony fashion. Don't you know that if white people really wanted to make some kind of systematically change, that the filthy, no good, stinky crackers, the first thing they would have to do is talk to their own brethren and convince their brethren to act like human beings? Do you ever see them crackers do that? Do you ever see them crackers jump at the defense of black folks? You know what I mean? To stand up against white supremacy and oppression of African people. And that's what Malcolm was saying. When everybody talks about Malcolm was saying about he had a newfound feeling of the devil when he got back from Africa. But no, he said, you got to take care of your business first before you can come and join me in anything. But people don't want to accept that. People don't want to deal with that. They just feel as though the white man is the authority. What the white man says is good. And if you get someone like this supposed beloved cracker Tim Wise to go and entertain you in regards to the racial propaganda and mistreatment of black folks, then he's supposedly a friend. Come on, man. You know, this is it. Now, dealing with your boy Sharpie Sharpton and the pimps of the pulpit, them pork chop chicken eaters, listen, anytime you get a pork chop chicken eater to get together and to do some marching, let them niggas put some soles on their feet, man. You know, get them shiny shoes a little dirty because they ain't going to do nothing other than pimp you anyway. Now, I don't know if y'all recognize that we got a special Negro out here right now that's a reverend. A Reverend William Barber, I think it is. Oh, William Barber, it looks like he may be able to overtake Sharpton and
Where's he from, Jay?
North Carolina.
Okay.
He's the Mortal Mondays guy. And he's now left the NAACP to put together this platform to talk about having a people's march. You know what I mean? To try and recreate what King was trying to do. And it seems like he gets a lot of play. You know, he's a hell of a speaker. Matter of fact, he's just good at shopping, if not a little better. He, you know, Jesse is old and his wig is a little off, so he can't, you know, dare to shuffle and do like he used to do. So listening to Jesse now is kind of painful. You know what I mean? But this guy, Barbara, you know what I mean? He got it. And plus, he got a strong backing with the Cracker. Oh, the Cracker loved that Negro, man. Because that Negro was having these Moral Mondays in North Carolina fighting back from what they were doing in that Destiny Demon State. And, you know, he was able to connect with a lot of the so-called good doer Crackers. And he's really, really built himself, you know, quite a bit of following. They love him over there at MSNBC. They get it. They, you know, they try to bring him on at least once or twice a week. You know what I mean? So he's giving Sharpton a run for his money. So I think that's why Sharpton came up with this whole nonsense about having these pork chop chicken eaters come together in Mars. Now, all I want to know is, are them pork chop chicken eaters going to open up their churches during the week, set up some programs, and take their money out of the White Daddy Bank? You know, if they do those three things, then I could have some respect for them. But they're not going to do those three things. They ain't never going to take their money out the White Daddy Bank. You know, that's why I always tell people, you talk about banking black and all that. No, I always say, buy the stock of the bank. Don't put your money in the bank. Buy the stock of the bank so that you can have the ability to be able to make some sort of statement in regards to what's going on with the bank, where you have a voice. You ain't going to have no voice because you don't put $200 or $300 into the bank. Who the hell care about that? They don't care about that. That's gaming you. You know? So the thing is, we don't realize that the Negro needs to stay out of the church unless the church is dealing with the agenda of building up community. If the church is dealing really with saving souls instead of claiming souls for the oppressor, it doesn't even make sense. Why are you going to claim a soul for someone or something that has basically oppressed you from the time that it was introduced to you? Does that make sense to you? Because it don't make no sense. It don't make no sense to me. I don't understand the logic in it. Now, I may be wrong, but I don't see anything that pork chop chicken eating institution has to offer, because, you know, I remember when I was a kid, my granddaddy, man, he had to tell my grandmother, that pork chop chicken eater don't sit at my table and get the big piece of chicken. She had the nerve to have that pork chop chicken eater come to dinner and sit at my granddaddy's table and talk about he gonna eat the breast of the chicken. Oh, my granddaddy got up and said, we not gonna have that BS here tonight. He don't get the big piece of chicken.
Oh, and he wanted the breast, huh?
At the pork chop chicken eater, you know, he said, She gonna serve that pimp before she served her husband. Oh, my grandfather went off. He went off. He said, no, it's not gonna happen then. And looked at the reverend and told him, if you was any kind of man of decency or anything, you would have told her you supposed to serve your husband before you serve me. Man, let me tell you something. My granddaddy told him, get your hat, get your coat, get your ass out my house. And I was 8 years old, and I'll never forget it. And I'm in my 50s now. I never forget it. Oh, my grandmother was mad for days. But my grandfather told him, I, the man of this house, I provide the food, I pay the bills, I do whatever is necessary so that we can survive as a family. And ain't no preacher coming into my house and eating before I do or eat the big piece of chicken. Never forget it, the day of my life. Mm-hmm. And you know what my grandmother did after that? She went and got a job. That's right. She went and got a job after that, Elliot. She went and got a job. You know what I mean? But that poor Celtican leader, he never came back to that house and sat at the head of the table. He come to the barbecue or something like that, because we were one of the fortunate enough black families to own a home, because my aunt's husband was in the army and was able to get a GI loan.
Okay.
You know, so they was able to get a house, and they was like the third or fourth family to you know, move into the neighborhood out there in Queens. But yeah, so he would only come back during the, you know, the barbecue, because, you know, every summer they would have a nice barbecue for the church members and stuff like that. But, you know, over 40 some years, I never forget that, brother. You know what I mean? And I ain't never been one for the church, never in my life. So I know what they're about. You can't go to them when your lights are out. They tell you if your dues ain't paid, your children can't get married, and they can't bury you. I've seen it where they wouldn't even bury long-standing members of the church because of the simple fact that, you know, they may be behind on their dues or something like that. You know, this is the type of thing that they would do. I know a family that the mother was in the church for 40, 50 years, and she was behind and paying her tithes and all of that. The family had to get together and pay the tithes that she owed in order for them to be able to bury that poor woman in that church.
Yeah, well,
she's been there for 40, 50 years.
Yeah, you listen, that, a lot of that stuff, I think Reverend Pinckney, correct me if I'm wrong, Richard, mentioned last week when we had him on, when he was talking about King and all. And in fact, you listen, a lot of the black ministers shunned King when he was out there. They didn't want nothing to do with him. Now, after he was murdered, everybody loved him. But
loved him.
I remember when he came to Philadelphia, and I was just a little boy, a lot of the ministers didn't come out to walk with him, Richard.
See, Dolores Tucker and the rest of them didn't want him to come to Philly.
Yeah. I think Leon Sullivan was
accepted by the oppressor.
Yeah, well,
that's why we have no real true religious leadership. You know what I mean? Nobody really wants to really address that. Now my question would be is, what purpose does it serve? Now think about this. To bring 1,000 people into a community that's oppressing you, and to give them your money. Because you know they're going to go in the stores, they're going to spend the money on water, they're going to spend the money on food, then they're going to more than likely have to spend money to get there. And in the process, what are you going to go do but to beg to someone that don't respect you, that don't really want to do nothing for you, and don't want to give you anything? You know what I mean? And if you notice, every week something is new is happening with this clown in the cracker house. You know, now one guy resigned today. Now there's something about Sessions and this and that. But, you know, the thing that most people don't realize about Sessions is a Ku Klux Klan member. And the Ku Klux Klan member, when they get in that position of power, they're not going to resign. You're going to have to get rid of him, because if you really think about it, all of the things that Sessions is doing is basically to put us right back in what position? To be oppressed. Right? Isn't he doing everything he can to put us back into the prison industrial complex, to make sentences longer, to make it tougher, to incarcerate us? All of those things, to do law and order. Because that's their front. You see what I'm saying? But nobody wants to address that. And they think that he's just going to say, well, because the president is talking bad about me, I'm going to go ahead and resign. You're going to have to kick that man out of office because of the simple fact he got an agenda. And his agenda is, unfortunately, to get rid of all the things that Obama did that he deemed to be good. And I leave you with this, like I said early on in another program. The biggest problem with Donald Trump and Barack Obama is Barack Obama is a better white man than Donald Trump is. If you look at it, think about it. Donald Trump, and you put him side by side with Barack Obama, who would be a better white man? All the way around. Who? Donald Trump is not respected around the world. Donald Trump is not seen as anything other than the bumbling buffoon and an idiot. Most white people really don't respect him. They think of him as a joke. But you can't really say that about Barack Obama. Most of the people overseas that he didn't go along and kill or he didn't destabilize their country had respect for him. The Queen of Men in England loved him. You know, Netanyahu had problems with him basically because he wouldn't totally do what they're trying to do now to the Palestinian people, is basically wipe them off the face of the earth. And I'm one of these people who, honestly, I feel as though they need to wipe them off the face of the earth because it don't make no sense to constantly be toyed with. You know what I mean? That's my personal feeling. Because the way that they treat the Palestinians, why don't you just totally get rid of them? Because it's not like the world is going to do anything to you. It's not like it's going to be a situation to where as them people are going to be missed. I mean, I'm just being real about it. But why would you torture him? Because that's all Israel do to the Palestinian people, if you really look at it and put it into its total context, is torture these people. Have you ever seen any other nation in the last 40 years that has treated a people in the manner in which the Palestinians are being treated by Israel? South Africa didn't treat us that bad.
But you know, honestly. But you know, Jay, I as you contextualize it like that, I can understand it. But I think that we have to still bring it home, and I want to tie two points together because what I don't know about, I never want to speak about what the white world should do. But what I agree with you is that we as African people, especially in North America, especially in America, who are allowing the U.S. to support Israel to, as you say, play torture those people, we as African people have a ethical and moral question that we have to deal with, because we should know better than anybody else on the planet at this point about being toyed and tortured for someone else's amusement. And here we, while we're working about our own self-interest, even as we deal with the frictions and feuds within ourselves, you don't hear no moral outcry from us about why are you torturing and playing with these people. And then we're giving our little bit of tax money to allow them to get out of the congressional coffer the money to do the development, the military development in Israel, so they can torture and toy with those Palestinian people. I think that
check this out. I don't know if you, and sorry to cut you off, but I don't know that the two state senators in my state, New York, just put together some legislation saying that you can be brought up on criminal charges for calling for a boycott of Israel.
Yeah, I seen that. SR 70, I believe, is the bill.
Yeah, I mean, that can
and that's the problem in itself, Jay, because it's plenty of black people that speak out about what's going on worldwide and what America's foreign policy is doing to other nations. But the people that have the bully pulpit, the people that have the access to media, the people that are supposed to be speaking on these issues where a lot of people can hear them. Because if you talk about it, Jay, it's a few people going to hear you. But if right. if your representative talk about it, then thousands of people will hear him. The people with the bully pulpit, they're not saying anything about it. It's people saying stuff about this stuff. But the people that have access to large numbers of people, they ain't saying nothing about it.
Yeah, but the thing is, how do you even allow it to get to the point to where as you can criminalize your own citizens at the expense of some butchers in another country? That's the crazy thing.
But it sets it up though, and this is the concern I have, Jay, and I think that you're putting a finger on something when we're talking about, and I want to make that connection, when we're talking about even having the police having these body cams, because it's the militarization of poor people, and anybody outside that 1% is poor in America. That has always been, and it will, up until there is a change, that will always be. So here you have these kind of bills making it seem like it's international. But what you see is that these things are taking root right here in the streets. So, I mean, I'm not a Facebook. I mean, I shouldn't say I go through this Facebook and I look at what people are posting in relationship to showing how these here police officers are actually. I mean, how can you wrestle down a young boy or handcuff an 8-year-old? I mean, how can you do that as a police officer and not be military and not be operating as if this is a police state? So when we talk about Israel and United States support about a foreign occupation, when they're actually saying, well, you got the land today, but you ain't got it tomorrow because we're going to build our houses on it. Well, what's the difference between that and gentrification in the communities that we live in?
Yeah, and then on top of that, you now have a situation where it just came to light today that in Baltimore, you had cops planting drugs on people, and now there's over 100 cases that are now questionable because of those type of dastardly acts that they're doing to our people, and we seem to think that there's nothing wrong with law enforcement. I mean, I just sometimes don't understand, do we as a people really, really see the severity and the oppression that we face at the hands of these devils, man? I question it a lot because I don't understand how could you just go along with the type of oppression that we face on a constant from these people and think that, you know, everything is all right. And you just protested about little things. I mean, if you really got some sense of true power, don't you think that, you know, there would be some repercussions and consequences for this type of dastardly act being done to our people instead of, you know, your only sense of recall is to protest? You know what I mean? Is to march? What are you getting out of that march? What is that march systemically changing in regards to our lives and making it to where as things are gonna be better for us? I don't see what am I getting and what is my community getting for me marching. For what? Could you tell me what we're getting for marching? Because I don't see what I'm getting in return for marching. I mean, you know, maybe I may be getting something, but I can't come to grips at this present time about what it is because I don't see it, you know, making any sort of systemic change in one's life by going out there marching. For what? What is the end game? Everything has an end game as far as I'm concerned. What are we getting for marching? If y'all could tell me that, then I would really appreciate it because I think I would have a better understanding of what our position and what is at stake from us marching. You know, do my feet feel better after I march? Is there a new, you know, program that they're coming out with to, you know, deal with corns and sore feet, and this is just a test runner? You know what I mean? What is it really all about? But listen, brother, y'all keep up the great work. You know what I mean? You know, let's say a prayer for OJ. Hope that he find him a good white woman to keep his black behind out of trouble. And hopefully, you know, he won't have to do the rest of those 24 years in jail, because you know they're going to be looking for OJ to come on and finish up his time. And, you know, as they say, let's keep hope alive. And, you know, white Jesus, come and save your black behind. Talk to y'all Sunday. Be good.
Jay, thanks for your contribution. Richard, what's the name, the number of that bill you was talking about? What's the number? That,
I think it's
Jay?
SR-70.
SR?
SR, yes.
Or HR?
I think it's a Senate. It's a Senate bill. I didn't get
Senate
to
bill,
it up, but I did.
SR-70. Okay, because yeah. I'm looking at HR-70, and that's not it.
Mm.
Okay. So I'm going to try to pull that up.
Yeah. And, but, you know, it's... Jay raises a point in the sense of what do we get out of these here marches? No, I agree. When you're marching to try to educate the person who is creating the condition for you, now. I would see value of getting something which if these marches took place in the community that we came from, and then that purpose of the march was to educate the community of the issues that we're dealing with, that we are powerless to deal with without their participation. Because right now, all of us sitting on the sidelines is only allowing this to go on and to develop. So it becomes important that if these were really organizing campaigns compared to what's that media image promotions about what our condition is, then, you know, you would see changes. I believe you would at least see, as you always say, Elliot, you would at least see, people become more informed, and then by being more informed, we could be able to make more choices that would be in our own best interest, and therefore be able to exhibit some sense of power. But if you're taking all your energy, or you know, and you trying to convince somebody else, and the people is looking at you, your people who need to be convinced more than anybody else, it becomes a challenge.
And you know, a lot of that energy, and I do agree with what Jay was talking about the a lot of that energy should be focused on at least rallying our people to understand what we're up against. A lot of our people don't grasp what they're up against and who's doing it. They just don't. You know, spending time marching to get and the underlying thing behind a lot of the marches, I'm not going to say all of them, a lot of the marches is to somehow appeal to the consciousness of white folks that somehow we should be treated equal. I mean, that whole principle in itself is a little convoluted logic to convince white folks that I'm equal to them. What?
Mm-hmm.
Come on here. That whole thing, my whole struggle is to convince some white person that I'm equal to him or should be treated equal, when my focus should be around my people and convincing them that the salvation of our people is our own self-determination. Mm-hmm. Not spending energy to try to convince white folks that we should be treated equal.
Yeah, I agree. And
if we do what we need to do as a people, mm-hmm. then the cream will come to the top. If we were the first people that the Almighty put on the face of this earth and gave us the sense to create laws and civilization to guide principles that the whole earth basically adopted. All of these nationalities that you see on the earth and the laws that they have to govern themselves, the origin of all of them, including this man, the origin of all of them came from us. If that's the case, then all we need to do is do what we have to do and the cream will come to the top. Why spend your energy trying to convince Europeans that we should be treated equal? I mean, maybe I'm wording it wrong. You follow what I'm saying, Richard?
Oh, definitely. It's definitely a misplaced political position.
No, I totally agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, in the sense of now, that's why I like this book, Mark, from the beginning, because I think he does do a good historical narrative, and that's Ibram X. Kendi in Stamp from the Beginning. He does do a good historical analysis of how this thinking of moral sway, he called it moral suasion, where if we can be able to prove to them, you know, moral uplift, that we can make ourselves better, then they would treat us differently. And in treating us differently, we would become the Americans like every other American. I mean, this is a way of thinking, a political positioning that is a part of the American-African perspective, at least some. And that's why David Walker kind of was trying to change that narrative, you know, in a bit. But that was a way of you could see it in Philadelphia, particularly the history of Black Philadelphia during the colonial period, especially the second generation. But you could see it in the first generation when we talk about Richard Allen and Absalom Jones. But the second generation, Robert Purvis and others, it was because they were the Black elite, and on one hand they were trying, they knew they were in a hostile environment. While they had more than most other Africans, and definitely more than those Africans in being enslaved. So I'm just saying that, Elliot, to say there is an origin for this way of thinking that I agree. Now, I agree, for me, speaking now don't make no sense to me. But it gets to that point that where Jay was at, and when he made the a point about the Palestinians. Do you just lay down and say, because these guys, the notion is that they will take us out, or like we said earlier about guns, that we would be able to rise up and take them out. And did we not do that because of something else? Is it because of the conditioning or because of what you raised earlier, the moral and ethical positioning of African people? I know there's a debate about that, but that seems to me to be where that comes from. You know, like, we're going to try to convince you that we're okay so you can treat us differently. That don't even make good math to me.
And, you know, you brought up, and we're going to take a brief break, and we're in open forum, so you can give us a call to join in the conversation at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We got a call on hold. I'm going to pick them up right after the break. But let me mention this, Richard, because, you know, they had an article in the Ebony magazine about African Americans are the most engaged people of any nationality with the Bible. Now, the critical question should be, if that's the case, and it is the case, they did surveys, why? Why is Black folks the most engaged when you're talking about the Bible and scriptures? knowing that a lot of the, and maybe some of our people don't know, but knowing that a lot of these writings that are deemed holy now, the origin of them comes straight off the continent and straight out of the minds of other black people. If Moses is credited with writing the first five books, Moses was raised, according to his the writings in the Bible, was raised in the home of a Pharaoh. Now, it's kind of odd that the Pharaoh's name is not mentioned in the scripture, but according to the Bible, he was raised in the home of a Pharaoh. And he understood the laws and everything of the country at that time. And you could see that those laws was clearly the same laws that was given to the people that the scriptures called the children of Israel. So if that's the case, then I think we have to take a critical analysis to why black folks are drawn to what is considered now called the Bible. And that's a lot of ways that you can take that. But when we're dealing with these things, we have to start looking at these things critically. Now, you mentioned David Walker, because at that time in 1829, I think he was killed or died.
Right.
Some people say under mysterious circumstances in 1831. But in 1829, when he wrote the appeal to colored citizens, he wasn't appealing to white citizens of the world. Right. He was appealing to colored citizens, according to the title of his book, of the world, and telling them at that time that self-determination was the key to our success and freedom as a people. And he was saying that in 1829. If you look at the time since we've been here, and I'm just talking about here, because a lot of our people get locked in to the scripture and talk about Jeremiah and Isaiah and Matthew and all of them was prophets. Okay, if you want to look at it like that, good. But if you believe that the Almighty has always been looking out for the interests of his people, then he's always been sending them prophets, even now. I contend that David Walker was a prophet.
Mm-hmm.
I contend that Malcolm X was a prophet.
Mm-hmm.
That definitely Marcus Garvey was a prophet. He ain't write in no book and no Bible, but these men were prophets. And you could see they were by a retrospect of what they said and what they wrote. You can see that those men were prophets. If you're using the measuring stick of prophets by what a man writes and what he says and what it comes to pass, I think the Bible says something about if what a man says don't come to pass, then he ain't a prophet.
Mm.
But let's explore some of that, because you shared with me some of the things the meeting that the representatives of Lincoln's administration had with some black leaders right after the Civil War was over.
Right.
And they were asking black people then what they wanted. It's kind of ironic that, and I want to share that with the listening audience if I can get a chance tonight. If not tonight, I'm going to do it in the near future. Because that was interesting what you shared with me, Richard, and when I read it.
I said, Ellie, you got to look at this section, because I wasn't aware of the intensity of that.
No, I wasn't either until you pulled my coat to it. And a lot of these writings, man, this European government, this white supremacist society, will keep a lot of these writings. You got to search for them. Listen here. Our people spending time marching, trying to appeal to this man's consciousness. This man knows exactly what he's dealing with and what he's created. The situation that he's created, he understands fully, back and forth, what it is. You're not pulling his coat to, oh boy, I've been hurting you all these years. No, it ain't like that. You're appealing to somebody's morality, that you're stepping on my foot. Why don't you ease up? No. It's not like that. This man clearly understands the situation he created. He created it. But let's go into it with, like I said, we got a couple calls on hold, and we're going to talk about this after we take a brief break. You can join the conversation. We're in open forum. Get involved at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Time for awakening. We're in open forum. We'll be right back.
Tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Hey, did y'all see the stuff I posted on my wall?
Nah, it didn't even show up in my news feed.
Man, I'm done with social media. All the injustice and brutality going around, and it's like they're trying to suppress our voice. We're trying to get the message out there, and you can't even share empowerment and what's going on around the country either.
Nah, don't be dumb with social media, though. It's a tool, and there is a place where we have a voice. It's a Let's Buy Black 365 social network. You do anything you want on any other social network. Post pictures, videos, status updates, share resources and community news. But on Let's Buy Black 365, it's a platform for us and by us to tell our messages.
Whoa, that's like a digital underground railroad.
What's the name of that site again?
It's letsbuyblack365.com.
Yeah, I heard about that. It's all about networking, and you get points, right?
Yeah, the more you network, post, and share, the more points you get. Plus, you get points for posting pictures, sharing information, attending community events, and inviting others to network with you on the app.
Wow, that's all I need to know. I'm gonna go download that app right now.
Now, better yet, let me invite you so I can get some points. It's all about empowerment and solutions, y'all.
Yeah, that's what's up. I'm all in.
Let's do it. Let's share our stories.
Let's buy black365.com.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
On the move. Assalamu alaikum. Free Mumia. Free Mumia. Free Mumia. Free Mumia now. Brothers and sisters, comrades, it's certainly my pleasure to be here. One of your state representatives from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, I am ashamed to be a state representative in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania with a chump like Governor Riz at the helm. I'm ashamed. But I wanted to come here today to let you know that some of us are not afraid, that even though we may be elected, we'll say what's on our mind. But we must understand that we are freedom fighters first, and that all the other things come next. Then I'm a black man first, and then a state representative. I don't confuse the two. And I think it's time for us to wake up and realize and understand that you got a lot of us that are willing to go to battle because the freedom ain't going to never be free unless we take it. There's too many of us sitting around thinking that it's going to come to us on some damn silver platter. Wake up, you fools, and understand this man has no respect for you. None. None whatsoever. And they will continue to do what they do to Mumia only because they feel that you don't have no heart. Well, let me just say this to y'all. I want to send a message to the FOP. I want to make it loud and clear so it won't be any mistake about what's being said today. And I'm saying it as a black man in the city of Philadelphia and not as the state representative. I ain't scared the hell of y'all. And I'm not going to let you intimidate our people either. That's over. So when you come on with some threat about you going to boycott every event that we have and you going to stop the people from coming to contribute their money, get the hell out of our way because we ain't going nowhere. The time has come for everybody to wake up and realize that this ain't no joke. We're not going to let you take Mumia's life. And we want to send a message to America that the death penalty has got to end. We're going to wipe it out the same way they did in South Africa. But they did it by power of the people. When Nelson Mandela stepped out of jail and threw his hands up in the air, he was a strong brother. After 27 years being in jail, it didn't cripple his spirit. And I want to let all of you know that have come from all across this country, you got some brothers and sisters in Philadelphia that are willing to rumble no matter what and ain't afraid of the Philadelphia police, the national police, the FOP, and all the rest of them that come together with. Day. In my conclusion, I just want to say, I know the time has been rough today, but a lot of y'all need to know what this looks like for many of us here in the city of Philadelphia. Governor Ridge is getting a message again. Not only did those 115,000 calls go on, that's an underestimated of the number that have been calling, as an underestimated number of those who signed petitions, as an underestimated number of those who've come in and out of the city of Philadelphia from all across this country to give the kind of solidarity that's needed in order to make sure we free Mumia Abdul-Jabbar. We're not going to take this lying down. And I know that Mumia, in his heart, knows that we're all with him. So brothers and sisters, we're here as freedom fighters and black liberation strugglers who understand the importance of who and what we are, and we ain't gonna let no titles get in the way. Free Mumia. Free Mumia. Free Mumia. Free Mumia. No justice. No justice. Assalamu alaikum.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m. Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And we're in open forum this evening. Give us a call, anything on your mind. Let's talk about it. And you can do that by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Richard.
Yes, sir.
Let me adjust this here. Before we go to the phones, a couple callers waiting. Let me read, you know, because you find some of our people and some of our people that have a voice don't think it's right to call out black folks when they're doing things that might be against the interests of the whole. And I think that's a problem with a lot of our elected officials, black elected officials, that they get in office and do things that they deem is right or what the Democratic Party tells them to do, but they don't do what's right and good for the whole of black people. Because if they did, our people wouldn't be in the situations that they face all over this country and a lot of these major cities and rural areas across the country, period. But let me give you an example of people that need to be called out. And when I find the names of these people, I'm going to read them on the air, and some of our listeners that's in these areas need to call up and expose them, because some of these people don't need to be in office calling themselves elected black elected officials. Two articles I want to just read to the listening audience that was came out this week, Associated Press article. Some black lawmakers will ignore the boycott over the Mississippi flag. This came from an AP article. Some of the Mississippi black lawmakers will attend a regional meeting for the state, ignoring the colleagues' decision to boycott the Confederate emblem of the state flag. Now, anybody that's not familiar, the Mississippi state flag has the Confederate flag in it. It's part of the flag. So black lawmakers or the black caucus in Mississippi had gotten together and said that they weren't going to meet in any more of these government functions until the debate about this flag comes to the floor. Let me continue the article. Mississippi House Speaker Philip Gunn tells the Clarion Ledger 13 members of the state's legislative black caucus will attend a meeting of the Southern Legislative Conference. Republican Philip Gunn is the chairman of the conference, which meets July 29th to August the 2nd in Biloxi. Black Caucus Chairwoman Sonia Williams Barnes, a Democrat from Gulfport, said in May that boycotting the meeting could pressure Mississippi to change the flag. Gunn says the Confederate emblem is offensive and should be removed, but he says that there's no consensus in the House to make that change. 50 of the state's 170 state lawmakers are black, and 49 are in the caucus. Now, if you got 50 members in 170 legislative body, that is power.
Mm-hmm.
But 13 of them said they're going to cross the picket line, so to speak, and meet under this flag anyway. Those 13 members ought to be called out and run out of office and run out on a rail and run out with a foot up their butt, whoever they are. If they decide to meet, if the rest of the caucus said, well, we going to hold off, we're not going to sit under these legislative bodies until they agree to talk about removing that emblem out of the flag, and you got 13 of them that said they're going to meet anyway, then they need to be exposed and called out. Mm. Now, here's another one. Now, this was in Mississippi, their black caucus. Here's another caucus in Nebraska. Black caucus leader, here's another AP report that came out the same day as this one. Black caucus leaders vote to remove a Nebraska Democratic Party official after remarks about the shooting of the congressman. The black, the Scalia, that Republican guy down there that got shot in Alexandria, Virginia. The Black Caucus of Nebraska Democratic Party has voted to censure its chair, Chelsea Gentry Tipton, for remarks she posted about the shooting of U.S. Representative Steve Scalise, according to the vice chair of the caucus. Maurice Jones, the vice chair, said the caucus executive committee voted 3-0 in a meeting Monday to censure Gentry Tipton Jones and remove her as the chair. Gentry Tipton said the meeting was invalid, because under caucus bylaws, only the chairperson can call a meeting. In a prepared statement, she said that she scheduled a meeting for the caucus for Sunday. In a press release, Jones said the committee passed a motion that read, "We hereby censure Chelsea Gentry Tipton for comments and remarks unbecoming of a representative or spokesperson of the Nebraska Black Caucus thereof, and reflective of the attitudes unacceptable to the same. And in consequence thereof, remove her as the chairperson of the Democratic Party Black Caucus of Nebraska." Jones said Gentry Tipton has not responded to requests from her fellow caucus leaders to apologize for what she called her precocious remarks on Facebook after Kalise was shot on June 14th. Nebraska Party Chairwoman Jane Klebb called for Gentry Tipton to step down as caucus chair, but she declined to do so. In a prepared statement, Jones said the black community values the lives of all persons, including those of political adversaries, Cornelius Williams, the treasurer of the caucus, said that he voted to remove Gentry Tipton because the fallout from her remarks is keeping her from doing her job as chair, thus keeping the caucus from working in the community on upcoming elections. He said the situation was to be put to the caucus in a position choosing, he said the situation was put to the caucus in a position of choosing between able to function and not able to function. So I voted to be able to function. So they censure and remove this woman because she made a remark about Scalise saying it didn't matter to her. You know, who cares about this man being shot? They got other things to think about and to do. So they didn't like those remarks and voted to remove her. These people need to be called out for their actions, whether it's the Nebraska Black Caucus, whether it's the Mississippi Black Caucus, whether it's the Pennsylvania Black Caucus, the New York Black Caucus, for what the caller Jay said that they're doing up there. These black caucuses that's supposed to represent people, that's the black people that's doing all this funny stuff, need to be exposed. And the lawmakers that's doing it, the black lawmakers, need to be exposed. And the people need to put a foot up there behind before they send them out of those offices. These people ain't nothing but traitors, turncoats to the people. They're not serving the people. They're serving special interests. You think that guy Scalise care about what's going on in the black community? If one of those people had been shot, you think Scalise would have organized a prayer vigil or anything else? He could have cared less. And if the woman wrote that in the position paper, okay, that was her position. You can't censure her. They didn't vote for her. She said that what they did was illegal. She's the only one that's the chairperson that can call a meeting. If the voters don't want her to represent her, let the voters cast her out. Yeah, handkerchief-head blacks that want to appeal to white people and figure they'll curry some type of favor by kicking the woman out of office or her chairwoman's seat. Some of these people are a disgrace and need to be called out. These issues should have been talked about, but when you got shows like Steve Harvey and Tom Joyner syndicated in every city, or laughing and joking every morning with all types of old Amos and Andy satires instead of talking about these issues, then black people don't know that these things are going on. They don't know what's going on around the country. Mm. Unless it just makes national news. Yeah, right. But these stories that affect the lives of our people in these areas, they don't know nothing about. Because these powers that be, Viacom and all these others, make sure that shows like that is a national that's syndicated in every city. I can drive in every city around this country, and even small ones, and hear all that laughing and joking and goofy crap every morning. And like I said before, I'm not against a laugh and a joke, but it's a time and place for everything. And every day, 6 days or 7 days a week, all this laughing and giggling, sometimes about serious issues, ain't the proper place for it.
Especially when there's no policies and programs presented with it. That's what the focus is, you know, has to constantly be on, or they'll keep us on dealing with personalities, because that sounds like a power. That sounds like a power coup that went on in Nebraska and an appeasement in Mississippi.
Oh, most definitely. How are you going to throw this woman? This woman is the chair of their caucus. And just because she made some remarks that some people might consider untimely, some black folks, because they figure it was offensive to whites, I'm quite sure that her remarks wasn't offensive to other black folks. Some black folks look at that the Republican Party as enemies anyway. So what difference does it make to some of them? Besides guys like here in Pennsylvania, you got Dwight Evans, people like that, that want to go to prayer vigils and offer the guy, go to baseball games because he figures it's appropriate. The guy probably can't play any sports, but he's at a baseball game. Come on, man. These people are a joke. We got these calls on.
Before you, I wanted to, as you go to the caller, that mm-hmm. bill was S-720.
Oh, okay.
Israel Anti-Boycott Act.
S-720? SR-720?
No, it just says S-720.
I'll check it out. S-720. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's go to 602 area code.
Yes, brother Richard and brother Elliot. This is brother Marcos from Memphis.
Sorry for the long wait, brother. How you doing?
No problem, no problem. You know, the white man ain't going to let you use his media to destroy him anyway. So, you know, we couldn't expect terrestrial radio to be, you know, he ain't going to let you use that. That's his. He put that door up there for him to keep himself in power. So, you know, and he put them buffoons there to you know, that's their job. So if anything, the callers should call in and speak what they got to speak. But they can't expect them, you know, because he ain't going to let you use his media to destroy him. Now, as Jay called and was talking about souls, church saving souls, it's ironic because, you know, years ago, we approached Reverend Butts up there in Harlem, Abyssinia Baptist Church, you know, and he said the same thing to us. He said, brother, we are only interested in saving souls. Well, you know, his name is, what's his name? Butts. And you know what come out of a butt, right? So, you know, it's, you know, but look, I'm telling you, 400 years is long enough to know we're not going to solve our problem in this, you know, in America. You see, it is Africa that is where black people going to get our strength. And why should we turn our back on the richest piece of real estate in the world? Coltan. Without Coltan, your phone couldn't work, your computer couldn't work, your iPad couldn't work. The Congo produced 64% of the world's coltan. Okay, other strategic minerals. You know, it's in Africa. Now I hear the damn Chinese. Now they over there in Africa. They put a military base over there. Now we got that to contend with over there. We have to turn
with all the bases that America has.
Exactly. And now we got the Chinese in North Africa, we got the damn Arabs, you know, then we got the East Indians over there, you know, and we're busy here trying to get along with this cracker here in America. To hell with him, okay? He ain't gonna, you know. We need to pick up Mr. Garvey's program. That is the solution. That was the biggest and most powerful organization in the 20th, he was more powerful than the NAACP, you know. So we, you know, there's a lot happening outside of America, you know.
Almost
there's a lot happening outside of America as far as black people moving now. You see, we got to catch up with our people now. Cause things happening outside of here.
And you know, Brother Marcus, you give me the opportunity to raise 2 points just to that, because UN ambassador, what's her, Haley, she had said, called the African group at the UN a collective failure. One, she was using the point of the famine going on and that the African countries aren't actually doing enough. But they rebuffed that with saying there's been 3 years of drought, so, and the resources doesn't allow to in all the countries where the drought is affecting. But what they were really addressing, and you touched on one of the countries, is that the country they put a seat up on the Human Rights Council where they wanted to. They're suggesting a representative from the Congo have a seat at the at this here Human Rights Council. Yeah, and then they don't want, you know, she said Haley had also berated African member states for nominating the Democratic Republic of Congo to the UN top human rights body, arguing that it has committed a serious human rights violation. So that's the issue, because as you say, when you talk about more things going on outside the country, Africans in the Caribbean, you know, the Caribbean talk about reparations. Exactly. You know, Africans are saying, whoa, we done had enough of this Western thing. We, you know, we what you telling us we done had enough of this. And they're going in the face of, and here, so she has the audacity come off, you're a collective failure. And they're going to make it like we're starving our own people compared to being starved of the resources. While, as you say, all those bases that the U.S. have in under AFRICOM, and which makes sense for China, and I'm not in no big favor of having China in Africa, but they spending their money there, so they want to protect their interests.
Yeah, but that still don't give them the Africans shouldn't give them the right to set up no base there. You know what I'm saying? Because look, the African has no friends outside of the race, and right now we got very few friends within the way it's going. You see what I'm saying? So it is imperative for us to link up with our motherland, link up with the diaspora. We need to create a mass movement of black people. You know, not this little one and two people going to Africa, a big mass movement of people. Because look, especially the African in this part of the world, we have the technological capability and we have the capital resources, okay? Africa has the resources, the land, and it has the labor pool. Intelligence will say, look, we need to marry that together. I mean, that is the solution for black people. Simple. Okay, we need to marry that together. Okay, because look, if we lose Africa, you know, we lose everything.
Right.
If we lose Africa, we lose it all. Africa is the prize. It ain't damn America or Jamaica or Haiti. It's Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And it's due time now for us to do the right thing. You know, you were speaking earlier about religion and what happened about Moses and stuff like that. You see, the Jews are the ones who wrote that Old Testament, that Talmud. You see, they read out of that Talmud. They don't read from the New Testament. And they got that from the 42, the Ten Commandments came out of the 42 negative confession.
Mm-hmm.
That's where he got it from. He pulled them Ten Commandments. And in fact, when you read the negative confession, it did not say, thou shall not kill or thou shall not steal. It said, I have not sinned.
Mm-hmm.
I have not, you see. So it turned the responsibility on the individual, you see. So that was a higher form, because if you lie, then you're lying to yourself. You see what I'm saying? You're incriminating yourself. So we are the original people. We are the one who laid it. We can do it. We have the ability. But we just need confidence in ourselves. We spend too much time trying to get along with damn white folks. Our problem is trying to get along with each other.
Yeah. That's a big problem.
That is the solution. That is the solution. We got to figure out how the hell do we get along with one another. Not to hell with the cracker. He got his own damn problems. He got problems down there, you know what I'm saying?
There you go.
You know? And look, if it go haywire, we in the same boat with him now. We saying, look, we need to get a damn life raft and jump off and leave his behind, you know what I'm saying? Go save ourselves. Anyway, brother, you keep up the good work, and thank you so much for the call, all right?
Talk Marcus, to you. Thank you for your call.
And Ella, I got to add one thing, another thing that Brother Marcus raised in relationship to having no friends, because another piece that's going on that we need to keep a watchful eye on is that Morocco asked itself to be a part of the African Union. Now it's asking, and there's resistance to be a part of the West African EWAS, the West African Economic Order. And the West Africans are saying they don't want Morocco. And I'm like, why would North Africa, Morocco, who pulled themselves out of the AU, now wants to be brought back in, and now wants to be brought back in the West African part. So it's, to Brother Marcus' point, it's, we have to be conscientious of all these political power interests that are out here now already, because this is a moment of transition. And I will add just one more point in the sense of what we as Africans, and you raised it, I think you raised it with David Walker, what we bring, we may not have the land. And I don't know too much about the technical ability, even though we've been westernized here and have some training. But we know, based off of the enslavement experience, we should have a sense of moral what is right as it relates to human relationships. We the only group, even continental Africans as ethnic identity, they took on something, but we were stripped of even being human beings and had to move in self-definition all the way through. That's different. So if we don't bring that to the continent, if we don't bring that to the world, I don't know. And that goes to that thing about what supposedly the religious belief systems are supposed to do.
You know, Richard, you made a point earlier when you raised about, what's that, Nikki Haley? Making statements in reference to black folks.
Right.
And you mentioned it was two remarks, and I don't know whether you was going to contain the other remark. The other remark came from that French president.
Yes.
When he said that Africa's problem is civilizational, right, because the women have seven and eight children. Mm-hmm. Made some type of racist wrong. And see, that shows you two things. Number one, that was Europeans talking about, that was during that G7 or that summit.
Right, G20.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, that was Europeans talking about what their plan for the world is.
Right.
Now,
with Trump there.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Now, what does that tell? See, that's why it's important for our people to really develop critical thinking when it comes to Europeans and white thinking, period. And when you're talking about white supremacy, because what does that tell you when a guy makes a remark like that, that their problem is civilizational, they have seven or eight children? See, when black folks speculate that Ebola, AIDS, and other situations and diseases that they said originated on the continent and is killing thousands of people. What's the other one? Ebola. It's another one. I'm missing one.
Yeah, I can't think of something virus.
Yeah, well, we can stick with those two right now. That's killing thousands of people on the continent. Mm-hmm. And a lot of black folks have speculated and showed some proofs that these things were man-made. Mm-hmm. You can see where the origin of all this stuff is coming from and why, based mm-hmm. on a statement like that from the French president. In fact, and it also shows how it plays some of our people out of position because of ignorance. And when I say ignorance, I'm not talking about people being stupid, just not knowing. Mm-hmm. Because when you had this situation in France where those bombings, supposedly terrorist bombings, was happening, all you seen on black social media, it was all over, but blacks was parroting it mm-hmm. about mm-hmm. pray for France and pray, mm-hmm. the hell with France. Whatever they going through, it's because of their foreign policy in these other countries. So they got to deal with that. I ain't praying for none of that crap that's going on in these other countries. I'm praying that our people start learning how to get together and come together. That's our salvation. Not worrying about France, England, or any of these other ones that's going through all this stuff that they're going through. That's what they got to go through. We don't have to go through it. Let's use this opportunity to rally our people around values and things that's going to uplift our folks, that's going to bring our folks together. That's the life raft that that Brother Marcus was talking about.
And you know, Elliot, it's so important at this point because of like what Brother Marcus is saying. Because we're saying if the West is putting their military bases there, the Asian China is putting its military and building roads and whatever and on the continent. If North Africa is making their move, whether it be by moving Africans, you know, out of towards Europe as as the middlemen for slaving or taking over as they did in Libya. These are things that we have to wrestle with, because this new world, the European world is being reshaped. It's being reshaped like it was in the old world, but it's being reshaped. And this time, what position? We can't be crying. We got to have a position. I mean, we should have a position. We should have a historical position. But we got to have a position, and it's got to be a power position. So as you say, you know, we have to be conscious, and we have to be knowledgeable, and we have to be clear that it's going to take some work, because it ain't going to be done by praying or begging or asking or pleading. It's going to be done by some real serious work. And in that work is going to be some casualties, unfortunately.
Let's grab another one. 215.
Hey, Brother Elliot, how you doing, my brother?
Hey, sir, how you doing?
Hey, Brother Richard, how you doing, good brother?
All right now, how you doing now?
I'm doing fine, all praises be. Oh, man, as Brother Marcus, oh, he's going to hit on so many key points, man. But before I talk about, you know, the situation with our people, like you said, our so-called black leadership in Nebraska and Mississippi, you know, Brother Elliot, I'll say this real brief, Brother Elliot, on the OJ thing with him being, you know, paroled yesterday. You just go to show you can't trust these devils. Now, that old cracker that he had at his house, Elliot and Richard, that Kate comes in, Cato, whatever that devil is. Now, here this devil trashing OJ all over the place. Now, here OJ let that cracker stay in his house for years, rent-free, eating up his food, you know, burning his electricity, gas, everything. This bum won't go throw OJ under the bus, called him a murderer. The artist to say he hoped the Goldman family get what they get their money from. Artists, I said, boy, that just go to show, but you can't trust these devils, man. After all he did for that piece of white trash, and now he's just dogging him all over the place, man. You know, when wild people ever learn, Elliot.
Well, what was he anyway? What was he, the maintenance man there? I forgot. What was he?
He was a leak. He was just pretty much a freeloader. Oh, you wouldn't let no black guy stay in his house all those years rent free doing nothing. He had to laugh, Elliot. You know what the truth is. You would have threw that nigga out on his head trying to stay in his house. But it's amazing how it's the same analogy, Elliot, like you had told me about Kanye West. It's amazing. He's coming, Charles Barkley. These Negroes could sit up there, if a black woman got any pigeon of being like a whore or whatever, them Negroes wouldn't give her the time of the day, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. But there'd be some little white hoe like Kim Kardashian. Them Negroes not only will marry them, they'll marry them, have babies with them. These white boys don't even want to have babies with them. Them Negroes will go marry them, have babies with them. These Negroes are stupid, man. You know, just as dumb as a damn, oh, man, I tell you. But that's all I want to say on that. But on the situation in Nebraska, now that sister, they haven't officially removed her yet, have they, Elliot?
Well, I think that she's going to fight it, but they have removed her.
Okay. I mean, is she still a state rep or whatever?
Well, they didn't take her. They took her chairmanship. They can't They can't remove her from office.
Okay.
Well, I guess only the voters can do that. But the voters can, the black voters that have put those other ones in, they can penalize them for what they're doing.
And they should, because like you said, them niggas got to be held accountable and stuff. Because I'm just like that sister, and that sister did say that she said it boldly, and she said without being unapologetic. I could care less about that cracker Scalise. I could care. My only regret, like I said, that devil that shot him, it's a shame that devil wasn't a better shot. I don't care nothing about that devil. See what get me, and Brother Most called the terrestrial radio station that we have in Philadelphia, black radio station, when all that happened, when that so-called weak-kneed, spineless congressman got on there talking about something. It was a shame what happened to him and everything. Brother and Brother Mo Carter, he said it's a shame what that devil vote's doing to our people, because he's part of that right-wing element in Congress that vote for programs to imprison our young black people, to imprison black people with long, unjust sentences. He vote to destroy health care. He vote to keep black people in impoverished areas without any kind of job training. He one of them devils that voted to make sure our people drink that filthy stinking water in Flint, Michigan. So what he's doing is cruel and humane. I could care less about that devil, Scalise. Like I said, my only regret is that guy didn't have wanting a better shot. I'm lose a bit of sleep over them devils. I'm just like that sister. I could care less. You know, and like I said, the same, you look at McCain. The ironic thing about John McCain with him being diagnosed with brain cancer, and I went to the town for the weekend and listened to this to really let this decipher in your brain. Now, here these devils, that Republican Party, this racist bastards they are, and even some of these spineless Democrats. Now they want to sit there and strip away people's health care, just take people's health care away and stuff, so people can won't have no way to be able to pay for their medical coverage, right? But yet John McCain, who's being treated now for brain cancer, right? Who the hell you think is paying for his medical coverage? Your tax dollars, Richard, my tax dollars, and myself, yours, Brother Elliot, and Sister Sarah, and my Brother Marcus, we all paying for that devil's health care. But yet they want to take everybody else's health care away, mainly people of color. See, that's the ironic thing. This shows you how Allah or Yahweh exposed these devils for the wicked demons that they are. You know what I mean? It just goes to show these are some heartless, compassionless people. These people have no compassion at all. They are evil, mean-spirited crackers and stuff. That's what they are. And people need to call it for what it is. So Scalise, Nikki Haley, that devil, the France president. See, like you said, these devils say all this racist stuff because that's what's in their heart. They say what they mean what they say. See, we're the ones that want to sit there and jive around and stuff like that. These people are who they are. They ain't going to never change. That's why it's up to us, like you said, Brother Ellis, for black people to strike while the iron is hot, while these devils are, like Brother Marcus, this country is going to hell in a handbasket. These crackers got enough problems. They have uncivil rest among themselves. Look at Trump and that foolishness with Jeff Sessions. Now, here devil that he appointed, a complete racist like Jeff Sessions. Now, him and Trump is at odds. So Trump really want him out of there, but Sessions is such a coward. He ain't got enough heart to go ahead and like a man and step down. But he's going to stand there, and you know, Trump really fell out of favor with him. But see, it's all about white racism and stuff like that. See, these devils don't even get along around with each other. Even though they are a bunch of bigots and stuff, it's no unity among them. See, we think it's unity. Only time they get unified when they come against black people. If them devils right now in the United States, I've said this for years. I already heard the Honorable Minister Farrakhan say, Brother Ellen Richard, if white folks had this whole United States by themselves, I'm saying, listen, there was no black folks, no Latinos, no Asians, no Indians. It was just white folks over here by themselves, and they always something with their country back. I bet you every dime you got, Brother Ellen, Brother Richard, don't practice within a week's time, they'd be killing each other. You know why? Because then they'll be find something to be superior, because they always got to feel superior to somebody. So you had a practice that got blue eyes saying that the whiteys with black eyes or green eyes is inferior, or the black man or the white people with blind hair is not, or the black with blind hair is more superior than the whites with red hair or brown hair. They'd be killing each other left and right. They would never have no peace among themselves, because they are, like the messengers, Honorable Elijah Muhammad, they are trouble-making, mischief-making people. They cannot live among peace among themselves. So you know damn well they can't live among peace among the darker people of the earth. You know what I mean, Elliot and Richard?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's why Dr. John Henry Clark said that we should learn the history of Europe, because the point that you make, I mean, up to the Second World War, and the only reason why they stopped there, they had no other choice. If they didn't stop there and they didn't use what came out of, because they tried to make it when it came out for Japan, but they built that nuclear bomb to throw on Europe.
Sure they
right.
did.
Right.
Sure.
So I mean, they built the machine gun in the First World War. They put the Gatling gun in the Civil War, but the machine gun. And you hear about the amount of lives that they killed. They weren't black people alive. They were white people alive. What I'm saying is they've been killing each other. Is the point that you're making for a long time. So to create the League of Nations, to create the United Nations, was a way to try to quarrel for them fighting with each other.
That's right.
And
that's right.
As they divided up the planet, as United States became the one that, you know, the forerunner of the controller of the gun, therefore the imperial power, i.e. the American Empire. But, you know, so it's that's what they've been wrestling with now, but they, by destabilizing the people of color around the world, they really, and go back to where we started, Elliot, they've been scared. If we got the gun,
mm-hmm.
we do the same thing they've done with the gun.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I heard the minister say that one time. See, it's one white people's biggest. Why you think Thomas Jefferson, that no good cracker, slave raping bastard, why you think he even made the comment before he died? He says, "I tremble." This is Jefferson's quote, the third president, devil of this country. This is a quote from this cracker, this rapist. "I tremble for my nation. that God's justice cannot remain dormant forever. Because he basically was saying what we have did to the Negro, what the Negro can rise up one day and do to us what we have did to him, what we have did to the Negro. That's what that cracker said before he died, because he know. Because he a no-good devil. He know about the stuff that these devils did. He believe in the so-called retribution and stuff. So your point is well taken. And I'll close with these last couple of comments, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And I'm glad you brought up Japan. You know, it's almost laughable when you hear these crackers. And again, like you said, Brother Elliot, a minute ago, black people parrot this foolishness about praying for France. You know, thank you for your service. They parrot the same stuff these crackers parrot. And it's sickening. Now, here you got these devils. They always, Israel included, they always want to, they so quick to say, well, we can't let Iran get a nuclear bomb. You know, we can't let North Korea get a bomb. But yet, in the history of mankind, who the only ones ever dropped a bomb on a human being was the cracker, the United States devils. They're the only ones that ever did it, right? And when you see, that's why it's good to watch them documentaries, because them devils, they tell the truth on their own evilness. They don't try to sugarcoat the evilness. They talk about how evil they are. On this documentary that was on PBS about a year or two ago, Brother Ellen and Brother Richard, the devil that was doing it said this. He said straight up, he says, when the United States dropped those bombs on Nagasaki and Hiroshima and them, they said that Japan had made, about a week earlier, Japan had pretty much conceded and surrendered. They said there wasn't no need to drop that bomb at all, but they said the United States wouldn't did it anyway. And why did they do it? Because they said they wanted to test to see how powerful it was. Did you hear what I just said, Alan Richard? This is what the devil said. He said the United States, two of them, decided to do it anyway because they knew that Japan wasn't no threat to them. They knew they'd already pretty much, you know, they said they did it just to see how powerful it was. So they're willing to sacrifice all those innocent Japanese men, women, and children, and some of those people to this day, over 70 years later, still suffering from that radiation. I mean, when they dropped them bombs, they said people's skin just evaporated off their flesh. See, only a devil, only a Caucasian devil would do that. And all them Negroes that's listening want to call Brother Joe a hatred. No, I ain't no hater. They the haters, because only an evil demon would do something to another human being. So they jumped their bomb just to see if it would work, see how powerful and lethal it was. So they just want to sacrifice all those innocent Japanese men, women, and children just to prove a point to themselves. See, that's only a devil would do something like that. And like I said, the devil that was the moderator, he acknowledged that. And I bet you people that watched that, see, like you said, Brother Elliot, this is why people stay in the dark, because instead of people like Steve Harvey and that other clown, Tom Joyner, keeping our people educated about historic situations like that and things about these legislators that's passed legislation to hurt black people, everything is a buck dance, a song and a dance. Like you said, I like a good laugh every now and then, but our people are going too much hell for all this damn foolish stuff, man. Our people are catching hell, these cops killing our people, our neighborhoods out of control, these stupid Negroes, misguided Negroes. We ain't got time for this foolishness and stuff, man. So this is why a devil can get up there and tell you that they dropped a bomb on Japan because they wanted to see our power. And nobody in our community even know that even happened. Or these devils can pass legislation that hurt our people in Flint, Michigan, elsewhere, and yet you'll never know because Tom Joyner and Steve Harvey buck dancing, clowning every day, laughing and giggling, laughing like the ministers say, straction where they don't itch and stuff. I mean, all this foolishness going on. So your point is definitely well taken on that, Ellen. That's why we got to overcome this foolishness. That's why shows like Time from the Waking is so critical, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, in this time and hour that we live in, man. Because these devils ain't playing. These are some evil, wicked demons out here that we're dealing with out here. They stick the police force on our people where they can just kill our people at will. And my last point, when you see that white female that got killed up in Minnesota, like I said, that black cop, he's going to jail. He's going to pay. He ain't getting away with that stuff. And like I said, it's amazing. These white cops, they can shoot that. Remember that young black girl, they shot up that young 8-year-old black girl that got shot in Detroit, Ayanna Jones, a few years ago, when them white cops were shooting all crazy and it was the wrong house anyway. Those white cops got acquitted, didn't serve a day in jail. But what happens in Louisiana? Those two black cops shooting at that white suspect, killed that white suspect's 6-year-old son, even the white boy was doing a criminal act, those black cops going to jail. That's right. I mean, so we see clearly, I mean, how many more examples do our people need before they see clear that you dealt with unjust, unrighteous people, man? And I just thank you, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, for your time, man. Y'all, Brother,
hey,
Brother
Joe,
Marcus, say,
listen,
keep doing what you're doing.
Before you hang up, I wanted to, because I know that you, certain sport. Now, I'm going to mention something to you, but I'm going to say something that you said a minute ago, because I'm familiar with a lot of those documentaries that they showed in reference to Japan. Now, when they dropped those bombs, they didn't drop because it was like you said, and I don't know whether it was a week or 10 days or whatever. They knew that Japan had planned to surrender.
Mm-hmm.
Now, instead of, if they wanted to drop a bomb, drop it on a military, because they knew where the military bases was.
Sure.
They decided to drop it on the two most populated cities.
That's right.
With just regular civilians there. They weren't
That's
military.
Right.
They were just, they were two cities with the civilians, men, women, and children, walking up and down the street, going about their everyday lives.
That's
and the next
right.
thing you know, what type of diabolical, you're talking about Frankenstein. What type of mind? Come on here. You couldn't even imagine the type of evil, the level of evil in somebody's mind to do that to an individual.
Exactly, Elliot. This is why the honorable life, how much say you do for race of devils and stuff. That's what always gets me when I heard Negroes used to get upset with Malcolm and the honorable life when they called a white man a devil. I'm saying to myself, these devils, I said, the honorable life, how many is using the word? Malcolm used the word. Dr. Khaled Muhammad, when he called them crackers and devils, these are words. These devils ain't saying them devils doing things. I mean, these cops can sit there and blow a 12-year-old boy away with a water gun, like Tamir Rice had a water pistol, whatever he had. They can blow a 12-year-old boy away, and Negroes get upset. Oh, you shouldn't have called the white people devils. I'm like, are you serious, Negro? These devils not only talking, they doing things. Dr. Khaled calling somebody a name. These devils killing people. These devils setting policies to hurt your people. You worry about somebody calling somebody a devil. I'm telling you, man, they make you sick, man.
I would like to introduce this other piece that we're just this earlier this month. 120 nations, basically people of color, passed and adopted the treaty banning nuclear weapons. Guess who the countries that didn't join in?
Let me guess, Richard.
Israel.
United States and Israel.
United States, Britain, and France.
In France, okay. But you might as well throw Israel in there, because Israel is the United States' is their daddies or kindred spirits, so you might as well throw them in the mix, too. And, you know, let me say this, Brother Ellie, when you talk about France, I'm like you, Brother Ellie. I could give a damn about that racist France, because as we speak right now, them devils, they harass Muslims. This is a government policy, not no individual France devil. This is a government policy. They are harassing sisters for wearing the Muslim hijab or covering their face. These sisters get harassed every time they wear that over there. Them devils harass, police harass them. And number two, that damn France and that racist, brutal England, they was part and partial along with the United Snakes of America and for the overthrow and murder of Brother Muammar Gaddafi. You heard what I said, Brother Elvin Richard? They was implicit in it. The United States, the United Snakes of America, France, and that damn England, they was complicit in the murder and overthrow of Brother Muammar Gaddafi. That's why I don't feel nothing for them devils, nothing. I don't feel not a bit of sympathy for none of them. They deserve to go just what they're going through, because their wicked policies, as Brother Malcolm say, the chickens have definitely come home to roost.
And Joe, before you leave, I want to, because I wanted your opinion on something, and it always happens, because when these issues come up, just like, and I'll give an example, the white woman that was killed up there in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
They use Black Lives Matters and other groups to kind of play black folks against one another.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's another example, because that's always been a white strategy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm watching clips of the sports show that came on. Now, the host is always making stupid statements in reference to black folks.
Mm-hmm.
Jason Whitlock.
Now, he
brings Michael Vick on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And the subject of Colin Kaepernick comes up.
Mm-hmm.
So, Vick, see, you know, when you come on these shows and you're going to be played out of position, if you're not kind of up on what's going on, then it's best not to say anything.
That's
because
right.
They'll use you and make you look like a fool. and then you'll be the subject of wrath from some segments of the community.
Mm-hmm.
Vic gets up there and says, well, you know, I think that if he wants to come back and play football, then one of the first things he needs to do is cut his hair. And the guy, Jason Whitlock, says, wait a minute. I want you to go into that because it'll be all over social media. Vic said he needs to, you know, some type of, you know what he was trying to insinuate.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So the other guy, the Hispanic guy over there, used to be a former lineman, Munoz, said, well, wait a minute. What do you mean cut his hair? He said, well, when I came back, and, you know, I was told that a lot of people don't like your image and you need to cut your hair because, you know, Vic had cornrows for a while.
That's correct.
You need to cut your hair. So I did it in order to get back in football. Now, number one, Vic was trying to get back in football because he was involved in something that he shouldn't even have gotten involved in, wasn't directly doing it.
That's correct.
He had knowledge of some type of dog fighting ring. So when you put yourself skirting the law or violating the law and they come against you, then you don't have nobody to blame but yourself. It wasn't like he was a totally innocent individual.
Mm-hmm.
So if he want to come back, then he got to do a certain amount of bowing and scraping if he mm-hmm. wanted to get back, which he did. He cut his hair off. Now, mm-hmm. I noticed when he made that statement about, you know, people was uncomfortable and I was advised that a lot of people don't like your image, so you need to cut your hair. He didn't go into these lot of people and people uncomfortable with his image. He should have went into that part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But to equate his situation with Colin Kaepernick, see, that's what I'm talking about. See, he mm-hmm. shouldn't have did that. But if he's ignorant of the fact of those things, then he shouldn't have went on those shows. Because
exactly.
if you're not up on things or have the quick mind to be able to answer some of these people, then they'll bring you on there and make you look stupid.
They sure they will.
Because Kaepernick didn't do anything to break a law.
He never broke no laws. That's right.
He was just exercising his constitutional right.
Exactly. And brother, your point is well taken because a friend of mine told me last night, so it's ironic you would bring that up, because a friend of mine told me like he had heard that Michael Vick been catching so much flack that he has some kind of apologizing for his comments about Kaepernick.
See, that's what I didn't see that. But that's what I'm mm-hmm. talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Don't come on there after you say something stupid or put your foot in your mouth. Then you got to turn around and apologize. And the guy that set him up to look like a dummy, that Jason Whitlock, is probably laughing. His show
he's
got ratings.
And
for what you say, Elliot, he was just parroting. He said, I'm just saying what they told me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm telling him what they told me. If you want to do something, you're going to have to clean up your image, thinking he's just like him. But it wasn't his thought. He was just passing on the thought that was given to him. He obeyed.
Oh.
And see, Brother Richard, they have always, and Brother Elliot, they have always used our these Negroes, like it's no different than when Brother Umar was on Roland Martin's show. They had them, the lesbian up there and the other fool up there, the Uncle Tom Republican. They always put these Negroes, and you can go back to Brother Malcolm. So I got a thing where Brother Malcolm tore these Negroes up back then on the debate. When Malcolm going to these white oriented shows back in the 60s and late 50s, whatever, they would put some little handkerchief Negro up there and stuff, because they didn't want to see these devils are so slick. They didn't want to put a white person up there because it would look so obvious. They put the Negro up there to do their dirty work, and it didn't matter because Malcolm would chop their head up. And it was an intellectual mismatch. Malcolm would just chop their head up. It was like taking a candy from a baby. You know, it wasn't no contest. But this, they did it with Muhammad Ali back then. They would put a handkerchief head up there to debate Ali about the Nation of Islam or about his religion or about, you know, his stance against the Vietnam War. And Ali, who just was a high school graduate, Ali would chop them Negroes up. You know, the Negroes might have had a college degree. because they lack knowledge of self. See, I only had knowledge of self. Them Negroes, though they had college degrees, they had the white man's education, so they wasn't no match for Ali. You know what I mean? See, when you know who you are as a people, it doesn't matter when them Negroes, they come to these fancy degrees from these white colleges. If you're a misguided Negro, you're just an overeducated fool that's been immersed in the white man's education. But when you come against an intelligent brother like yourself, Brother Elliot or Brother Richard, it becomes an international mismatch, you know? And it's just that simple, you know?
Yeah, well, don't put me in that class. I ain't too...
No, but Richard's intelligent brothers. I'm
Richard's in that class.
But y'all brothers know what time it is and stuff. I mean, y'all know what time it is. I mean, I appreciate y'all being humble about everything. That's fine. But y'all brothers got a brand in y'all head. Y'all can hold your own with anybody. You know what I mean? And so some Negro, they put some Negro against you, Brother Ellard, Brother Rich. Y'all do this no different than what Ali did and what Malcolm did to them silly Negroes. Them Negroes don't know nothing. All they are is a bunch of white educated fools. You know? As simple as that, man. You know? But thanks, Brother Ellen and Richard, for your time, man. I appreciate a good show. And as Brother Marcus said, y'all brothers keep doing what y'all doing. Y'all doing a great job, man, trying to wake our people and uplift our people up during these most, critical times. That's the best way to describe it. We live in some very perilous times right now, man, more than ever. It's always been critical for us in America, but with the climate that's in this environment, the climate we live in, it makes it that much more, the stakes are that much more higher. And believe me, I don't take for granted. I appreciate everything which you and Richard bring to the table every Friday and every Sunday, Brother Elliot. I really do, man. Thank y'all so much.
Thank you for your call, Joe.
You're welcome, thank Brother you, Elliot, man. Brother Richard.
Richard, we come up on the end of another program. You know, we're going to have in the coming weeks, the Black is Back Coalition is having their political convention, Black Independent Convention up in Chicago. I think it's August 12th to the 15th. And it's kind of on the heels of... The Universal African People's Party's political convention down in St. Louis that the Black is Back Coalition was a part of. So we see that this is an extension of it, and it's growing. Mm-hmm. Now, you're not going to hear about this on popular media and even terrestrial media that some blacks are involved in. But this black independent movement is growing.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have Brother Cam Howard, who is the legislative chair of NCOBRA, probably come on before the convention to kind of give the audience an overview of what's going to be going on and things of that nature. But we can see that this thing is growing among our people. A lot of young people that are moving back south are developing a mindset where they're going to enter these political races, but they don't seem to be entering them as Democrats.
Right.
And if they are entering them as Democrats, they have a different agenda than the Democratic Party. So let's see what's going to go on. You know, a lot of them have adopted the same thing as the 1 million conscious black voters and contributors about registering as a no party affiliation. Some of them register as independent, depending on the state and how their rules are as far as registering to vote in these primaries. But, you know, I'm kind of glad that this movement is growing and we can see the evolution of it right before our eyes. I'm quite sure that Donnie Bradford of the 1 million conscious black voters and contributors will probably be in Chicago. If he, I'll probably be talking to him in the future. But I know Zaki Baruti will be there because he's a part of this whole black independent movement. So it's without question he's going to be there because him and Brother O'Malley Ishiteli have adopted the same planks. I think the 19 different planks
right. That
they use. So I know that they'll be there or representation will be there. So Cam Howard will be on with before the political convention up there at on August the 12th to kind of give a listening audience an overview. And it should be very informative to our listening audience. But that's it for this evening. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. I always love the open forums because it's a lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Sunday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.